Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield. Globally, more than 300,000 children are diagnosed with cancer each year. One in 285 children in the United States will be diagnosed with some form of cancer before the age of 20. In 80% of the kids, the cancer has already spread to other areas in the body by the time it is found. What's Bugging You is a new series of books written by Kristen Barnett to aid parents, teachers, grandparents, and others talk with kids about real-life scenarios like bullying, adoption, moving, and other difficult situations. Author Kristen Barnett helps parents talk to children about cancer in the first book of the series, The Bug Who Thought He Lost His Buzz. Kristen Barnett joins us via phone from Denver, Colorado. Kristen, welcome to 411 Teen.
Yes, welcome everyone. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, yes. What were you trying to accomplish with the publication of The Bug Who Thought He Lost His Buzz?
Yeah. So, I always say, right, the best stories are those that come from experience. And for me personally, I had volunteered for 10 plus years at my local children's hospital. And through that time, I had several parents ask me, do I tell my 2-, 3-, 4-year-old child they have cancer? And if yes, how? So that was really the impetus for me to try to go to bookstores and libraries to try to find books that could help these families. And what I found was there were several books for early readers and teenagers, but not necessarily the little children, so the ones from about 2 to 7 years old. And so that was really the birth of the What's Bugging You series.
And cancer affects, you know, young children and adults, and it affects them in different ways. So I'm glad that you made that distinction. It's estimated that 69,212 adolescents and young adults ages 15 to 39 were diagnosed with cancer in 2011. This is about six times the number of cases diagnosed in children 0 to 14. You know, this was reported by the National Cancer Institute. What is different about your book, even though we know that it deals with a younger age? So that is a significant difference, because we don't see a lot of books addressing that. But can you share with us exactly what distinguishes your particular book?
I think what makes our book different, but also very special, I mean, you had mentioned the age group, but these books, first, of course, we wanted these books to be very appealing to children. So although we're dealing with difficult topics, our books do include like a Finding Watts activity. They're very colorful. We use rhyme, sounds. But I also believe these books also are targeted for parents and caretakers. And so we took a lot of time, me being a parent myself, looking how can we be educational, right? So all these books have bugs as main characters. And we also did that on purpose because we found that both boys and girls like books, like bugs, I mean. And so in each of our books, we do have a lot of fun facts around bugs. We also have a glossary of terms. We have resources on our website, which I've had lots of readers write back to me and say how important that is, you know, some of those resources, because I believe our book is a first step to having these conversations. But a lot of those resources also deal with things such as siblings, right? Because a lot of these families, along with the child that is sick, has a sibling.
Right.
And so how do you talk to siblings, you know, activities families can do and so forth. And so I feel what makes these books really special is although they are for children, they're also targeted towards the parents and caretakers also.
And that's great. That's what I wanted to know, just who were your target readers, because these books, you know, if a child has cancer or a debilitating condition or whatever may be the case, it doesn't live in that vacuum. And so parents and school and friends are all impacted, and they're going to be questioning and wondering. So anyone, from what I hear you saying, from the child to the parent to the school, can benefit from reading these books.
Exactly, exactly. And you made a really interesting point before where you said, obviously, you know, cancer isn't doesn't target a certain age, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the readers, actually, we had a scenario where it was his best friend who had just found out that she was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And he asked, because she had small children at home and she did not know even how to approach the topic with her children. So she said, can we use these books, right, to help her situation? And beautifully enough, she said it was the best gift that she was given because she was not sure even how she was going to approach the topic. Because, of course, a lot of these topics are even difficult adults to talk about, let alone children. So I think you make a great point in that I think that's what's really special about these books.
Mm-hmm. When did you start writing them? How long did it take? I mean, did it just flow real quickly? I know you have a lot of resources. What role did they play?
Yeah. So interesting. So great question. So, you know, I think a lot of the books that we're writing, and of course, you had mentioned earlier that this is a series, and this first book is the first book of the series. So, you know, we have other topics, such as you mentioned bullying, adoption, moving, and so forth. And when you said, you know, how long have these books taken to write and so forth, some of the topics. So this first book, to be honest, because I was so in the middle of it, it did not take me very long to write. It took me about 30 minutes to write.
Oh, really?
Yeah. However, the book, so I'm working on a book right now about losing a pet because I've had several readers reach out to me and say, we're in that process and this is really difficult and, you know, do you have a book around that topic? And so this book, I have to admit, has taken me a lot longer to write. And most likely that is because I also have a pet that's 14 years old. And so I know I need to write it before, unfortunately, he passes, because otherwise I know it'd be very difficult afterwards to write it. But so it's interesting per topic, how long that it's taken me to write. So that has varied. But in regards to the overall process, you know, I definitely believe for me it's been both a faith journey and, you know, several instances I know just kind of came in place, which was wonderful. But there was a lot of course, just believing, praying, so forth, that it took to do this series.
Tell us about the topic.
This book is a book to help parents talk specifically about being diagnosed and then dealing with a terminal illness. And in this book specifically, we are following a bug named Bugsy. And he goes to the hospital because he feels like he's lost his buzz. And at the hospital, he finds out that he has the big bad beast, which is cancer. And we really follow then Bugsy through his journey of asking some of those tough questions, which I would hear a lot at the hospital, such as, why me? Why do I have to take this medicine? Why are doctors keep coming in and out of my room? So we deal with some of those tough questions within the book, but it's really Bugsy's journey of being diagnosed with a terminal illness.
Well, you know, and coping with a terminal or chronic illness is extremely stressful. But particularly when you hear the word cancer, it puts a whole different twist on things. Would you agree with that? Or what has your experience found?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, working with families for such a long time, and, you know, one of the main questions, of course, I'm asked a lot is, you know, when are these books appropriate? And, you know, how do you have parents use this book? And you know, and I feel like, obviously, right when the diagnosis happens, parents are in shock. And then go through feeling very overwhelmed. But one of the important parts I coach families on, and that's why I think this book is so critical, is I tell parents, you know, it's really important to be as open and transparent as possible because the kids see it anyway, right? I mean, they notice whether you tell the child that you're sad or that you have fears. Kids read those things, and so it's better actually to be, you know, to show your emotions, to talk to you about your emotions as a family, allow your children to ask questions, you know, as they have questions, because they will along the journey. And I think that's what another piece, you know, I hear from these books is that they're like, you dealt with some of those emotions. And I think that's why, you know, this is a really, really great tool for families to use right away, even when they've heard about the diagnosis.
And I think that's a really valuable point, because so often, I don't know if it's just the American culture, we tend to kind of skirt those kinds of issues and yeah. not talk about them. Research has indicated that the child, the family, and all of those around are involved, handle the issue much better, whether it's cancer or bullying, when you're straightforward, when you're real candid yeah. with them, as opposed to being rather evasive.
Exactly. You know, and I'm sure statistics show this too, especially I would say it starts around the age of 10, that when you have not been open with the child and the mm-hmm. child knows that you have fear, they start to play the role as protector.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return momentarily. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me on phone is Kristen Barnett. She comes from Denver, Colorado, and she is sharing information about her book, The Bug Who Thought He Lost His Buzz. Kristen, I had to interrupt you. You were just talking about the way parents adapt and handling and telling, being very candid with what's going on. I had to interrupt you, so you may continue.
So when we left, what I was talking about is a lot of times when parents, to your point, when they're not open or candid with emotions, that children, especially from 10 and older, will start to play a protective role for their parents versus mm-hmm. Allowing the child to work through the issues with their own emotions. And so I feel like, again, that's why it's so important that everyone in the family is very open about their frustrations, what they're angry about, where they have questions, and so forth.
Right. What were some of the issues from the parental perspective, some of the concerns that you found that parents play? I mean, it's only natural yeah. for them to be scared and them to be confused. But the family actually plays a real pivotal role in the coping of this illness.
Initially, and unfortunately, I mean, I guess this is good and bad, even when families initially get diagnosed, Prior to being diagnosed with cancer, a lot of families, doctors initially feel like it may be something else than cancer. So a lot of times doctors have previous diagnoses before even the cancer diagnosis. And so, you know, working with families, I mean, even at the beginning, you know, the initial part is, do we now know the path, right? Like they have felt very out of control. I think the scariest thing when your child is going through any type of illness is not, of course, knowing the journey, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of questions initially of what treatments are we looking at? Are we sure this is the journey? And, of course, to your point, fear. I mean, you know, all families, of course, have the fear of you hear the word cancer and you automatically go to, is this the end, mm-hmm. right?
Indeed.
So go through that whole, you know, grief, doubt process, right, is a lot of the questions. And then, you know, questions, and at Children's specifically, at Children's Hospital, our hospital is one of the top five in the nation when it comes to oncology. And so we have families that are all over United States that basically hear the diagnosis and then have to pack bags and be on a plane. Oh. And so, of course, that is very scary. And, you know, what does life look like? I mean, especially if you have other children in the family, and how do you, you know, your norm is changing. So it's a lot of the questions that people would ask if suddenly your life, right, is in upheaval and you're like, how am I going to have regular life happen as I'm having to deal with this illness with my child? And so you get a lot of those types of questions. And then, you know, from siblings, of course, you get the questions of, you know, what does this mean in regards to our family dynamics, right? What does this mean in regards to my relationship with mom and dad and my sibling and so
indeed.
Forth? And so, you know, and then I would say the questions progress over time, right? Mm. So the initial is a lot of questions around denial, shock, fear, and then a lot of the questions start to be around treatments and what does this actually mean to me?
Mm-hmm. Why did you start your series with cancer? What made you select that?
Yeah, great question. So as I mentioned kind of earlier, it was both my volunteer work, and then I also said I had another book in the series around adoption, but it was those two scenarios that brought me to both bookstores and libraries to look for books to help children. And so I felt like with those books being kind of the start to the series, that mm-hmm. that's where I needed to start. And I also knew that through my research, especially with the cancer, that there was a lot of books around emotions, you know, and I do deal with some of those emotions in my books, but there wasn't a lot of books around the whole journey, right, mm-hmm. of being diagnosed and so forth. And so I felt it was really critical to have this book be my first book.
Well, you've referred a lot to your volunteer work at Children's Hospital in Denver. Share your personal story with us. I mean, what did you do? What did this volunteer work involve?
Yeah. So, you know, interesting story. So, I mean, I started volunteering there at Children's. I mean, my whole life I've really been into paying it forward. So I've always wanted to volunteer. But my husband and I were going through the processes of unfortunately having miscarriages and through the process of adoption. And I knew that I wanted to do volunteer work with children. And, you know, I had a lot of people ask, they're like, wow, you know, you've gone through some loss. So is that going to be hard for you? And for me, actually, I will say it was very valuable and mm-hmm. it was very healing for me because I was able to, you know, talk to families on their level and understand, mm-hmm, right, what mm-hmm. they were going through.
You had that empathy. You could empathize.
Exactly.
With yeah.
And so, you know, when I went to volunteer, I didn't necessarily know at that moment I was going to end up in oncology. But through the process, that's where I ended up. And I definitely think, again, that was a faith thing for me, that that was meant for me. Mm-hmm. And so your question about, you know, what was my role there? So, you know, I believe I had lots of different roles. So I, mm-hmm. you know, my main role that they had you do was helping volunteer in the playroom or, you know, be in the rooms if families can be present or so forth. But I believe over time, right, unfortunately, these families are there for long periods of time, especially if the child is going through like a bone marrow transplant. Mm. And so I would build these relationships with families. So I think it was along with the kids, I think I ended up being a support system for the families too. So I think, you know, my role was to be there as needed, and every week it was something different, right? Some weeks it was, you know, just sitting with families as they heard, you know, this last treatment didn't work. Mm-hmm. Or other weeks it was celebrating with families because they're like, you know, we now believe our child's in remission. And so very different job every week, but each one was, you know, where I felt I needed to be.
Well, in your working with families and observing how the roads they take and the avenues they choose, what have you found? How have they handled the pressure? What are some of the ways that you've observed families and parents handling the stress and the pressure of the diagnosis of cancer?
Yeah, so for me, you know, and I know one of the topics we haven't dived yet into really deep is, you know, around is around faith, right?
Yeah, so, and we will. We'll get there.
And it was, but it's part of what I think is important for families. So, because mm-hmm. one of the things I observed in the hospital was families that had, you know, some type of faith, right, were able to better manage the stress. And, you know, they were doing, obviously, in the hospital, they were doing things such as, you know, praying as a family. And I feel like that was very helpful, which was some of the reasons I did have a faith message mm-hmm. put into each of my books, was because I just volunteering there, I know that these families needed hope. And in a lot of cases, in my belief, faith equates to also hope. And so, so in regards to dealing with stress, I think that's the number one thing. But I also feel like, you know, families found their different outlets. And the hospital was great at this. And so, there, you know, there was different things at the hospital where as kids were going through treatment, like there was the bead necklace, and some of the kids loved to mm-hmm. add beads to their necklace. And it was kind of like a courage necklace. A lot of kids, of course, got into different things like journaling helped. The wonderful thing that I'd see at the hospital, which, again, to me, was one of what I feel made my volunteering so rewarding was, you know, it was not just me helping these families, right? Yeah. I saw families helping each other. I saw kids in the hospital, small kids, that had cancer, also taking other kids around in the wagon, around the halls. Mm-hmm. And so it was really a whole community. And I feel like that is also what really helps families get through something traumatic, such as cancer.
Well, I really liked how you handled the faith, because that was a question I think I may have posed to you indirectly. I know that mm-hmm. that you incorporated God, our hope, a lot into your book. And I just wonder how one made the adaptation, because all families don't believe in God. They may be spiritual, but God may not be the direction that they take. And I liked how you encapsulated it by saying it was really faith. So that makes it whatever your thing is. can be useful.
Exactly. Yeah, and I've had families, you know, substitute God, right, mm-hmm. in the stories. And so you're absolutely right. I mean, it was a main reason also because more religions, you're right, not all religions utilize, you know, have God, right?
Mm-hmm.
But more religions, of course, talk about God versus, you know, other, like if you talk the Bible and so forth. So that it was really important for me
mm-hmm.
Because you're right. I wanted to look at something that was a lot more universal.
Mm-hmm. We're talking so much about this book. Would you take time to share where one can purchase your book?
There is two places that they can purchase our book. First of all, on our website, which is www.watts, so it's Watts, like a firefly,
mm-hmm.
W-A-T-T-S, buggingyou.com, or they can purchase our books on Amazon.
As you think about a parent and how they cope and what they use to make it easier, did you find that parent, and talking about their emotions particularly, did you find that they felt guilty? Because so often when something like this occurs, the parents feel responsible and they feel guilty about it.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, and that's a great question. I did not see guilt as much as I saw parents saying, why did this happen to my child versus me?
Okay.
So, mm-hmm. yeah, so we got a lot of, you know, I in a second, right, would trade places with my child. I think the other really scary thing for parents, of course, going through this is that sense of not feeling control, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I think, and so in every other case, as you're being a parent, right, you're able to, you know, not always, you know, you try, right, to provide the right answers to your children. But in regards to something like cancer, you don't always know, you know, what's going to happen, right? You don't have control of everything in the process. And I think for parents, that's the scariest thing. Is that why did this have to happen to my child? And, you know, what is this going to mean?
Yeah, okay. I can understand that. Groups, how important or how supportive were groups as far as a coping mechanism? Support groups, we know they're often beneficial, and you just mentioned how, you know, families helping families, you observe that. What did you find about groups? Because I'm thinking about our listening audience and those who may be experiencing this a diagnosis of cancer for their children or one of their children. What can they do? What helps? What other things help them, aid them in coping?
Love this question, and it's interesting because I have not yet been asked this question, and I think it's so important.
Okay.
In regards to families dealing with something like cancer, and I you know, I'm going to use an example, actually.
Okay.
So while I was volunteering at Children's Hospital, actually one of our chaplains started a group at lunchtime that I was involved in, and they had not had this type of group before, where it was they actually just wanted the parents there and not the children. Mm-hmm. So it was also a support group just, you know, for the families and the parents. And what was really interesting, and, you know, this was definitely a life lesson for myself also, is, you know, as families are initially going through the diagnosis, they didn't want to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I could see myself being in those same shoes, right? We, in regular life, want to feel like we can do everything on our own. And then when it comes to something like cancer that completely changes your norm,
right.
What the families will say, and this, I'm not kidding you, they say the most important thing that people can do for them is yes, you know, touch base with them, say I care, but to be there as support, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to do things, even helping mow their lawn,
mm-hmm.
Clean their house, pick their kids up from school, you know, things that they don't have to worry about as they're, you know, going through this whole journey of having cancer. And I think when you talk support groups, so, you know, that's a whole nother step, too, of people that are going through the journey with you, mm-hmm. right? Then in a lot of cases, they're dealing with the same issues that you are. And I feel in a lot of cases that that's one of the only ways families can make it through this,
oh.
is to use all those different levels of help.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that, because so often people may be reluctant to participate in groups, yet, again, research has indicated particularly support groups are very beneficial because you have folks there who are going through the same thing that you're going through, and that is an immediate connection, as opposed to having a professional just telling you this is what you need to do, that's what you need to do, as opposed when you have individuals there and families there who are experiencing what you're experiencing, it's a much more significant connection. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and this hour I'm talking with Kristen Barnett. She's the author of The Bug Who Thought He Lost His Buzz, What Happens When the Big Bad Beast Stings. We're going to take a break, but we'll return shortly.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You tuned into 411 Teen, a conversational forum. This hour, we are examining coping with cancer. I have an author, Kristen Barnett, who wrote The Bug Who Thought He Lost His Buzz. And it's talking about coping and dealing with cancer on all perspectives, the parent, the child, the environment, the community. And
yeah.
Kristen, as we go there, I wonder, what about have you found the schools being very helpful in this handling and coping with cancer?
Yeah. And I did want to I wanted to say one last thing.
Sure.
Of this whole conversation around community support, health,
mm-hmm.
so forth, is, you know, so just recently, which was very impactful evening. So one of the things that we're doing right now, because we had families say, how can I help even if I don't have a child directly dealing with
exactly.
cancer right now, right? How
mm-hmm.
can I help other families? And so one of the things we started was this Donate a Book to a Kid campaign,
right.
where people can buy a book, and we're delivering them specially to children. And why I wanted to bring that scenario up is because last Friday, September 28th, was our first giveaway, and we did it at Ronald McDonald House. And we had with us one of the children that we dedicated the book to, Christian Marino, along with his mother, Stacy. And I will tell you after that event, because the two of them spoke and they did tell their story, and you were just saying the same thing, you know, people understanding people's stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
We had some of those families, and it makes me teary-eyed right now, know, stick around and say, we stayed past dinner because you were telling my story,
mm.
right? And so, obviously, a beautiful event, because we
yeah.
had, I can't tell you how many families came up and started asking Christian and his mom specific questions because they could relate to these families. And so, I just wanted to put that out there again,
mm-hmm.
Because I think it is really important that you get connected with people that understand your story.
Yeah. I mean, they have to understand the story. That is really the key. We've talked just a little bit about them, but siblings often are the ones who feel left out. They're left out because all the attention all of a sudden now goes to, you know, Joey, who has leukemia, and everybody is focused on Joey. Do you have suggestions that you may offer to parents as to how to help them keep that sibling, that well child sibling, involved and make them feel very significant and important during this really tumultuous time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love again that you asked that, and I'm gonna kind of respond to both your questions because you asked about teachers, educators, and then siblings.
Right.
Because I agree with you. I think they're both have their roles, right? And are impacted. So from the sibling perspective, I spent a lot of time actually on some of my resource materials that I was mentioning on the website, because I think the number one thing people come back with after, you know, dealing through some of the hardships of cancer is later on in life saying, I wish I would have also put more focus, you know, on the children and the family, right, that mm-hmm. weren't directly going through the cancer. And so I think you're absolutely right. I think it's definitely a concern. And one of the things, you know, as I mentioned before in regards to support, is, you know, if you do have a family member, a friend, so forth, who has a family and one of the children is dealing with cancer, I think one of the main things that you can do is talk to the family and say, you know, how can we keep the other kids' lives as normal as possible, mm-hmm. right? Allowing them to still be in their activities, helping them do their homework, driving to and from school. Because I feel like for families, the parents that I've talked to that have additional children in the family, that's the thing they're the most nervous about, right, is that they want for their kids to keep life as normal as possible, even
Indeed.
When it's
yeah.
in the storm.
That's so important.
So, yeah, so I think the more that you can get kids living their regular lives as much as possible, mm-hmm. the better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, again, as a family, I think it's really, really important. And that's why I mentioned, you know, earlier, too, in the interview, how important it is to be transparent, right? Mm. So I think it's very important with the entire family to talk about what this change means, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to continually touch base with all the children in the family to say, you know, where are your concerns? You know, how are you feeling, right? And mm-hmm. not just the child that's dealing directly with the cancer.
Right.
So that's kind of my response to sibling. In regards to educators, love that you bring that up. I was just mentioning this the other day when somebody said, you know, how can I help? My friend whose child is going through cancer. And I think the most important thing is to work on awareness, right? I think children in a lot of cases that are going through the cancer also want to have that feeling of normal and acceptance. Mm-hmm. I hear that a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the time when they are going through remission, you know, unfortunately, we've got people that still, you know, stare, so forth, and these kids are like, I want to be me again, right? And so I think it's important to educate schools about that, to have schools, you know, talking to young children about differences, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know that's a big topic these days mm-hmm. in schools anyway, is around diversity and so forth, but
right.
I think this is another topic that they can talk about of you know, kids going through something like this and an illness, and how can we accept that child? So I think that's mm-hmm. that's a very good question, is how can we use schools?
Mm-hmm. As you think about culture, and I know in the United States we have a number of subcultures. I'm talking about the dominant culture now. Do you think it's obsessed with perfection? I mean, there seems to be just perfection. There seems to be an indifference to anything. They're not very sensitive. We're trying to get there, but there's an insensitivity.
100% agree with you.
Oh, okay.
I think, you know, I think we're going more and more. I mean, they even say right in the workplace that people hire like them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think as a society, we're always judging what's not like us.
Right.
And I personally, it was something else, you know, from my volunteer work. I mean, one of the main things I always talk about is that I feel blessed. I mean, not blessed that cancer exists.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I wish
no.
it didn't exist. But blessed to be in a scenario that I learned what's important in life,
mm-hmm.
right? I have a perfect example of this, and it ended up being one of my favorite families when we talk about norm, diversity, so forth. So we had, at one point in time, there was the child, he was around 1 year old, and his whole family was a Harley family.
Mm-hmm.
And they came from all parts of the United States to come visit this child. I mean, it was amazing. He never had an empty room, which was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I remember volunteering there and watching people as the family would come in and out, you know, because they did come with all their leathers and, you know, different things.
And, right.
And it was a perfect example of don't judge a book by its cover.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as I said, that family was probably some of the best people I've ever met. And the love that they had for that child, was amazing. I think that was a great example of how, you know, we need to better learn to accept people and accept differences and diversity and so forth.
Yeah, because I think when you hear that someone has cancer, there's a certain stigma automatically that is attached to it. And the stigma is not positive at all. Okay. And so when you hear it, you know, there's this stigma that's associated with it. And then all these ideas, incorrect ideas, are conjured up. And it just leads to a lot of misinformation.
Exactly. And you can just imagine mm-hmm. A child thrown in that situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when they do, hopefully, right, go through the remission and having to be out in society and suddenly, you know, don't have the hair and
right, exactly,
and some of the other symptoms of mm-hmm. cancer. And you're right, people automatically, you know, the other thing that I know families, talking to families and people's reactions and so forth is the whole, you know, everybody looks at the family and says, poor me. Right.
Right.
And the family is like, that's the worst reaction because, you know, what they're looking for right now is hope and being normal. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, again, that's what I've taken, you know, and the nice part being through the experience that I've been through is being able to teach those kinds of things to my own daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Of how we need to learn to love and accept versus providing different types of stigmas onto people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I liked what made you add a glossary to your book. I like that little aspect of it. I like that. I thought that it helped kids put their feelings together, and it helped them be able to identify what they were feeling.
Exactly. Yeah, and thank you for that. You know, I, being a parent myself, loved putting that glossary together
mm-hmm.
because I felt like, it was twofold, because to your point, it provided understanding to children. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it provided learning. And so, you know, being a parent myself, those are, of course, things that I love. Mm-hmm. When I see books that Riley can ask me questions as we're reading, and that's, you know, what I'm hoping for also as parents are reading through these books.
Share with us where one can purchase your book.
So you can either go to What's Bugging You, so WATTS, again, like a firefly, buggingyou.com, or you can purchase the book off of Amazon.
Now, you have a website. Will you is that the same? Will you share your website? And what can listeners, what can they find visiting your website? What's available on the website?
So that is the same website, the Watts, the WATTS, buggingyou.com. And then on the website, and, you know, love a lot of different materials. So, you know, these books, again, I feel are kind of a first step, right, mm-hmm. to conversations. But what we're really trying to build on the website is build a community. So, you know, we've talked a lot about community on this phone call, and I'm also hoping the website, you know, over time will be a really good support system for families. And so on the website, we have things such as those resource materials. And so those go through, again, activities you can do with your families, some of the common questions. And then I put out there, you know, just due to my experience, some great organizations that people can connect to. I mean, of course, I always say still connect to your medical teams and so forth, because in local areas they may also have great support groups and so forth, but I put some of those resources out on the site. And then some of the other things we have on our site, which is great. So I do have a blog, so I do a monthly blog, and that blog deals with a lot of the topics in the books. It also deals, again, with a faith journey, because a lot of people have those questions, right, as mm-hmm. they're going through this. So I deal with some of those topics. And then I also have a whole section on paying it forward. So, again, I had mentioned earlier on that I love this whole concept of, you know, who's given much, much is expected, mm-hmm. and that we should all be, you know, in our communities. And so I have a section on how families with their children, you know, giving to the community. And so right now it's a lot of things my daughter and I've done together. But that's a whole other section. I've heard lots of people love that because they're like, what can we do to get our children involved in the community? And so so that's something else that we have on our website. And then we always keep up, you know, what we're doing. So in regards to events and campaigns and things that we're doing that people can get involved in.
And a percentage of the proceeds of the book is donated, correct?
Yes. So again, we have two great things that we kicked off in September, but they're still continuing. And we kicked these different programs off in September because it was Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. Uh-huh. We have the Donate a Book to a Child, so we have that on our website. And then we also, every book sold, so even those books that people buy to donate, we are providing a percentage of proceeds to organizations that are specifically focused towards pediatric research and mm-hmm. awareness, so places such as Children's Hospital, St. Jude's, Ronald McDonald House, so forth.
And to my listening audience, I'd like to let them know that I will be donating my copy to Tallahassee Memorial Hospital here.
Aww.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, after I read it, I was really impressed with it. I liked it. You did an excellent job. So kudos to you. Yeah. In this last couple of seconds, any insights you want to share before we close?
You can connect to me through my website. Would love, you know, to hear from you. Yeah, that's basically it. But thank you. I mean, this was a great, great interview, so I appreciate it.
And thank you. And to my listening audience, I thank you for your time and your ear and ask you to tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Team archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.